Welcome to Sisters of Sound. I'm your new host, Morgan Shepherd. I'm taking over for Ariana. Ari has moved on to work at Black Box Records.
Yay, Ari! So happy for her. Yeah. Living her best life. I'm actually so excited for her.
Totally. And I also have to give her major props, kudos, handshake, hug.
All of the
embrace, because I actually got this position because of her, mm-hmm. because she posted about it and was like, I'm leaving my job. Mm-hmm. Would anybody like it? And I was like, hi, raise my hand. Me.
I would. The prayer emoji. Please. Me, yes. Please.
So thank you so much, Ari. Really excited to take on this beauty that you've created with Brianna.
Yeah, I'm also so honored to have been a part of the last couple of episodes. Ari has created such a brainchild here at Sisters of Sound, and it's just so exciting that she's introduced both you and I to a bunch of different women across the audio field, and we're just really happy to have this forum to talk about it.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is.
And today we're talking to somebody very close to us.
Very near and dear to our hearts.
Which is great for me because it's my first episode, so we're just getting into it with our coworker.
Yay! Very own Christine Leslie.
She actually sits beside me most days. She is our director of licensing and executive producer here at Tattoo Sound and Music.
And just generally a boss ass bitch.
Totally. Like, when I started here, I could just tell, like, she knows everything about everything.
She's tatted up. She's cool. She has a really cool job.
She dresses way cooler than I do.
Oh, 100. She honestly is one of the coolest women I know. 110%.
And she's here with us now. Christine, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
I know
it's so convenient.
I was going to say it was a really long trek for you to make it all the way here to chat. We're so glad you could join us.
Just up the stairs.
Yes.
That's it. It's a good workout.
It's great. So we're going to talk about what you currently do here at Tattoo later on. But first, we want to talk about how you got your start. You started in this career at a very young age, and you grew up in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So how did it all begin?
Oh, God. So I was really young. I think I just finished high school, and so I was 17, and I went to York University for a week and
a week.
Yeah,
cool week.
A week. hated it and quit. I was living with my grandparents at the time, and my grandfather said, if you're not going to school, you have to get a job. And my aunt was working as a agency producer at an ad agency called McLaren. Mm. McLaren Lintus at the time. Mm-hmm. And so she got me a job working as a receptionist at an art and design firm. And
very cool. At 17.
At 17.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. And back then, everybody would go out for drinks after work, and I was the only one not allowed to go. But I did drink a couple times.
I was going to say, did you not go?
Yes.
That's pretty sure
all the truth
out.
Is, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, so that was my first introduction into the advertising world, which was crazy.
So how did you go from receptionist to music licensing? Like, what was the jump there? Did you produce for a while or?
Well, there was no real schooling back in the day. And so you had to learn from the bottom up, and I was really determined. I wanted to be an agency producer, mm-hmm. and the best way to become an agency producer was to work at all the different suppliers. So I worked at a film company, and then I worked at a couple ad agencies, and the one thing that I wanted to learn was about music production, audio production. Mm-hmm. So there was an opportunity to be a receptionist at an audio house called Louder Music. And so I went and I got myself a job there.
And you make it sound so easy.
Yeah, I know. Like, you just stumbled across all these things, Mom.
Well,
just knock, knock. Hey, I'm here for my job.
I had connections. My family is either in the car business or in the production business.
Okay.
So I would rely on my family to help me get at least open the door. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then it was up to me to kind of walk through it and prove my worth. And so what happened was I was at this music company, and the production coordinator, she left, and there was they need to fill her position. So I kind of took over while the bosses were looking for a new production mm-hmm. coordinator. And after months of searching, they finally announced that they found somebody. I was like, thank God that they found somebody to take over this position, because I can go back to wanting to be an agency producer. So they announced that it was me.
Psych!
I know. Exactly.
That's amazing.
I almost died. I went, what? You guys know what you're doing?
You're like, get that my experience has been limited so far, friends.
Yes, exactly. I freaked.
That's so good.
But yeah, it was quite a challenge. So the first couple years, I worked every night till about midnight and on weekends, just learning. And I learned everything I could possibly learn about music production. The only background I had in music was I took piano lessons for 8 years, and I never passed grade one.
You want me to play Mary Had a Little Lamb?
Yeah, I can play that on my right hand. My left, no.
Hot cross buns. Yes. Hot cross buns.
That's it.
So you've been doing this for a long time now.
Yes.
And we know that you've accomplished quite a bit. If you could just tell us, maybe what are the top 2 accomplishments so far in your career?
My first accomplishment, I think, is doing what I love. I love music, and finding what you love is my biggest accomplishment. I am so happy to come to work every single day. So I think that's my first. My second accomplishment is that, you know, somebody helped me a long time ago when I first got into production, because I was freaking out, didn't know what I was doing. And this woman called me up, and she was a veteran in our business, and said, if you need anything, and she was a competitor of mine, if you need anything, just let me know, and wow. I will talk you through something. And so I called on her once, and she helped me out. And all she said was, just help other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that my second accomplishment is that I was able to do that. And I've been able to help a lot of people and pass that on. Before that whole thing with Pay It Forward, mm-hmm. we were doing Pay It Forward, yeah. but didn't know. So I enjoy doing that too. It's something that it's not a chore for me. I'm happy to help people out. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
That's kind of been a theme in the past couple of episodes. A lot of the women that we've been talking to have been talking about, like, don't worry about who's going to screw you over or whatever. Like, yeah. help people when you can, because it feels good.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, an ally. You have somebody around you who's, like, there to help you out as well.
Exactly. I'm glad to hear that other people feel the same way, too. Mm-hmm. It's also very empowering when you can help somebody.
Mm-hmm. Totally. You know? And especially women in this business, there's so, mm-hmm. I mean, Brianna and I were talking this morning about how she is the first female engineer in my 6 years of working in sound that yeah. I've actually worked with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you're working with so few women, it's just so much more important to just come together and help each other out.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of Brianna. She's Aww. The second female engineer. And I've been in the business for way longer.
She's your second?
She's only
wow.
the second. Yeah. Only. And I honestly, I think there should be more. But I was actually very proud to at an event, and was all about women, that I was able to say that we don't have any gender walls here mm-hmm. at Tattoo, and that we do have a female engineer, but we don't identify anybody as male and female. It's just she's an engineer.
Yeah.
which is a great, it's a great thing. Yeah. It's a great thing to promote.
Yeah. And like, sure. I did the same thing that all the boys did. I worked my way up, mama. Like,
yeah.
Totally.
You right? killed it.
Right?
You killed it.
Crushing
I'm a big
it.
Fan. I'm a big fan of yours.
And this is a butter my bread hour. And I'm okay with it. So, Chrissy.
Yes.
We've heard a lot of tales of how the advertising agency or the advertising world has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the biggest difference to you from how the advertising world used to be and how it is now?
Well, we just touched on a little bit of it. Mm-hmm. It's the Me Too.
Mm-hmm.
The Me Too movement is a big one. You know, back in the day, women didn't really have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm proud to say that I feel like we're way past that now. When I first got started, the one thing that I really thought was amazing in the advertising world was that we would have mentors. So we would have people training us so we knew what we were doing. I think they've lost a little bit of that now. People don't get that kind of training and mentorship anymore. So they're just kind of thrown into it. However, I was thrown into it too. So I don't know. you know, the advertising business was also run by what we called the British Mafia. Mm-hmm. And they were scary. So you had to know what you were doing. And I think that really helped me back then, is that if you made a mistake, they would point it out and you were fired. And so I really, really worked hard because I didn't want to make a mistake, you know, but I would also own it if I did and take responsibility. I'm not sure if that happens anymore. People don't like to take responsibility for their mistakes. They like to blame people.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit different. The budgets back in when I first started were way bigger, so we could do crazy things all the time. And, you know, we'd have, instead of cranes, we would actually hire helicopters to shoot everything.
Oh my God.
So, and then we would hire full bands, full orchestras. We had that kind of money.
Yeah.
In fact, I on a daily basis, I was hiring full orchestras and, you know, at midnight trying to find a trumpet player, like four
wow.
trumpet players for a session the next day. I don't have that kind of stress right now. we don't hire full orchestras or you know, musicians like we did back then. Everybody sort of, you know, plays it on their machines at home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
different.
Cool.
That's what I can think of right now.
Yeah. I think in my like 4 years of being here or whatever, I've only had an orchestra in here once, and it was only like 8 pieces.
Oh, wow.
And I remember you guys saying it was like a huge studio floor.
Yeah, 14 pieces.
Yeah, easy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It was crazy. We knew everyone, though, in the city.
And mm-hmm.
It was knew all the musicians in the city, so they were always busy. So
that's great.
Throughout your career, you've blended many different jobs into your one position. And right now, you are a executive producer for us and our music supervisor. Is this common, or are you just like a magical unicorn in this industry?
if you look at my pink nails, you might think that
I'm the horn coming out of your forehead.
The pimple. No, I'm not a magical unicorn. I don't think it's common for most executive producers to also do music supervision. I can't think of any other in Toronto or across Canada.
So you are a magical unicorn.
Maybe. I kind of stumbled on it. So I was working for a company previous to Tattoo, and my boss, I was an executive producer, and my boss asked me to come into a meeting. And he said, I just need you to supervise. And so, It was a TV show, and they came to one particular scene in the episode we were watching, and they said they needed to license a song. And so my boss asked me to write down, you know, what song it was. And then after we spotted the TV show, he said, okay, the girl that normally does all my licensing just quit, so you need to license this for me. And I went, what?
Cool. Sounds like fun.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So thankfully, one of my best girlfriends works at Sony ATV, and I called her up and said, help. What the hell do I do?
There's that theme again.
Yep. Help. Yep. Yes. So she kind of talked me through everything. I had no idea what the word MFN meant, which means most favored nation. And even at that, when I looked it up online, I went, what the hell does this mean? So she talked me through everything, and I ended up licensing the song. So then from there, all of a sudden, I got another TV show called How to Solve a Problem Like Maria. I was working with another music supervisor, and we had to clear songs. And it was kind of like a Canadian Idol kind of format, mm-hmm. Where girls would get up on stage and audition to be the role of Maria. And so they had their judging panel, and you know, they chose the girl that sang the best, I guess. And so that was a crash course in learning how to license music really quickly. And from there, it just kind of blossomed. And that's how I learned to do licensing and do music searches. So
you have a huge network now, too. Like when you do any licensing, mm-hmm. you have a handful, more than a handful of people that you can come in contact with, because you've been doing it successfully for the last like 7 years at least, right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. The community, you rely on each other, mm-hmm. music publishers and the labels. And you kind of become friends.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. You have to do crazy negotiations. And sometimes they're outrageously ridiculous and
probably stressful at times.
It mm-hmm. is stressful, but you know, hopefully you've got a good relationship mm-hmm. with the people that work at big labels and small labels and publishers, and then you can kind of talk things through. Mm-hmm. So you do become friends after a while. You go to a lot of events together, mm-hmm. and with doing all these big shows, I would talk to them every day.
Yeah.
And so you learn a lot about their families, their lives, because you talk more than just business.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of great. So.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And you become friends with them on Facebook, so you get to see what they're up to.
Yeah. Or you follow them on Instagram, and that's like a picture or a window
for sure.
Their life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
So we kind of touched on this in the beginning part of this, but as a lady in this mm-hmm. industry, mm-hmm. what are some of the struggles that you faced, my dear?
Oh, mansplaining.
Oh, mm-hmm. Barbara.
So that, I've been in situations where men have taken credit for my work.
Oh.
So, at first, that really upset me. And then after a while, I thought, you know what? It's okay. I'm working behind the scenes. I know my value. I know my worth. So for the longest time, I was, I kind of was okay knowing my own self-worth. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But now as I'm older, more mature, I like to speak out that, no, I have to take responsibility for the work that I have done, and mm-hmm. let other people know, because if I don't, the younger, female generation coming up, they're going to do the same thing as I did, mm-hmm. is not speak up. So I've had to overcome that. And also equal pay. That was a hard thing to realize when I was coming up through the business. There was a guy that was hired to do a job, and he was underneath me. And I found that out that he was getting paid way more than I did, or I was. So, you know, it took me a while to get the courage to go to my bosses and tell them that I didn't think that that was fair. And that was before the movement. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was something that I've always had to deal with.
So how do you get the courage to do something like that, Christine? How do you, like, was it like a week of like thinking about it and then you just do it? Or was it just like a long process where you're like, I deserve this?
Well, as soon as I found out that he was making more money, that drove me crazy for at least a day. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when I have a bee in my bonnet, then I just deal with it right away.
Yeah.
So I marched right in and, you know, I prepared my speech 5 minutes before in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I deserve this money, and I listed off all the reasons why. And I was surprised that they didn't even know that they were paying me less.
Really?
They had no idea. They had no idea. So the great thing was they gave me more.
Good.
Which was great. Good. So,
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's just be in the present right now. We're all sitting here.
Yeah.
Where we all work at Tattoo. And yes. I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, what does a day look like to you when you come into the office?
Oh, my God. All right. Well.
And I want you to start, like.
At 9 o'clock?
No, like, start before you actually get here.
Oh, God.
Like, when you wake up.
Well, the first thing I do when I wake up is I put on music, because I'm always listening to music. So that kind of starts my day. I don't like listening to the news. If I turn on the news, it's just to hear the weather, and that's pretty much it. I want to start my day positive, so that's why I put on the CBC Radio 2 or whatever, you know, sometimes Indie 88 or sometimes my Spotify, just whatever is easier or easiest first thing in the morning. So I listen to music. And then, you know, I drag myself out the door. I'm usually about 10 minutes late, you know. And then I guess what happens is production pretty much starts sometime at 10 o'clock. There's occasionally you get emails before that. But, you know, as soon as I get to the office, as you know, I turned on my music and start listening to music. I don't know what I'm going to listen to.
What do you use to listen? Do you have like a playlist by genre?
Nope.
Recommended?
Nope. It depends, because I get a lot of emails every single day.
Mm-hmm.
I would say upwards to 150 emails of music. So, Jesus. You know how you were saying what has changed in the business? Well, music. There's so much music. And it's all free music. So it's sent to me daily. So I often look at, you know, go through my list of emails and see if there's anything that I want to listen to. So I often pop that on. Yesterday I was sent a new song from Spiritualize. And Spiritualize, they haven't had a song since the 90s that I'm aware of. So, and it was great. So that was, I mean, that's what I love about my job is that, there's music sent to me all the time. So I'm either looking at through my emails that I was sent or past emails, or I throw on a radio station, whether it be, you know, a Toronto station or an internet station, or sometimes I go into SoundCloud and just see if I can do a search for, you know, whatever kind of music. Some you get lost sometimes, mm-hmm. Searching for music. So, you know, I could spend like a couple hours and then realize, oh, shoot, I have to go back and, you know, put together a quote for somebody.
So on like, that note, back to your day.
Yes, back to my day.
Sorry, we just got lost in the music.
See, that's what happens. Yeah. So, you know, what happens? Usually we have a session every day. So I'm often entertaining clients when they come in. And because I'm also an executive producer, I put together the estimates. I'm making sure that we're briefing our composers if we are writing original music. I'm making sure that we know that we have to do sound design, or I'm putting together for the spots, or I'm putting together auditions for voiceovers, auditions for singers, you know, basically general audio production. Mm-hmm. I often come up to the studios, and if our clients are here, you know, just check on them to make sure that there's nothing they don't need, or if there's a last minute change or anything. So my day is spent just organizing and quoting jobs and listening to music.
Sounds amazing.
Honestly, the dream. Yes, Christine.
I know. I live the dream. I live the dream.
So you've done like a lot of different licensing jobs, obviously. Yeah. How often do you get to bring your own taste into your work?
I think every job you bring your own taste. Whether I listen to the genre of music that I've been asked to search for. So what I mean by that is sometimes there's certain – my personal taste is so different from the music that I have to search for. And so, for example, I had to do a search for hip hop music, and that's something I don't listen to on a regular basis. But, when I do a search, often I have the labels and publishers and whoever else send me, and the artists send me, songs and for the pitch. And I'm choosing the songs based on what I feel that I like. Mm-hmm. So people are hiring me for my taste.
Yeah.
So, and I'm presenting, you know, my short list of songs that I enjoy and based on their brief. So I think hopefully that answers your question. But I think that, my tastes are in every single job that I do.
Yeah.
That's great.
Very cool. Is there an artist that you've helped bring into the spotlight?
There's two. And I've forgotten it. Well, they're both for Joe Fresh. So I was, I did Joe Fresh for a while. There were two artists. One, this woman named Illis. So she did this song called Dance. And it was pretty amazing. It wasn't a huge hit, but it was certainly recognizable. People knew the song. Anyway, what I found really interesting was the publisher called me a couple years after I had licensed a song and told me that Anna, she was from Sweden or something. She took all the money that she had made from the license, and she bought a church in Sweden, and she turned it into a place where musicians, young musicians, old musicians could come and just play and record, and it was all free.
What? So that is so cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So I just thought that was super amazing. And it was all because I licensed her track. So that to me was really empowering when I heard that she did something like that. And she just gave back. And then another Joe Fresh song was it was called Bomb Bomb by Sam and the Womp. And it was doing really, really well in Europe. And Joe Fresh had used that on their DJ had used it on one of their runways, and the agency asked me to license it for their commercial, and I think it went to number one in Canada because it was such a catchy song. So I thought that was really amazing.
Yeah, that is so cool. Yeah. And you do see that happening from time to time. Like iTunes is probably one of the bigger ones. They'll pick an artist that's less in the spotlight, and then their commercials are so big that inevitably they become streaming on Spotify and everyone's really into it.
Mm-hmm. Like Feist, that's the classic example for me. One, two, three, four.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was huge.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, but it's really hard to license anything from her now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But back then that's what really put her on the map.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder now, like, being in this studio and, like, talking to you so often, whenever I see, like, a huge song on TV or a huge song in a commercial, I'm just baffled by how much money the brand has spent or the show has spent in order to get that song there.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
even what's the license where you get it covered?
Do you mean you buy just the publishing only and you do a re-record?
Yeah. That's I find that very interesting.
Well, that's a lot of fun. We just did that recently with Canadian Tire with Cyndi Lauper's True Colors. Yeah.
That's a great ad.
Yeah, it was a great ad, and it was a lot of fun to work on that. But, you know, I think we're lucky because most of the times when we do covers here, they sound amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not doesn't happen all that often, you know, but I'm proud of that one.
That's a good one.
What do you think the future looks like for music supervisors in Canada? It's not a very common position. So 20 years from now.
I think that it's becoming more common. There was no such thing when I first started in the business. Nobody knew what a music supervisor was. And I think that certainly in the U.S., I went to a conference just recently and I couldn't believe how many music supervisors were there from L.A. And I think it's really common in L.A. because they've got so much production going on there. I think in Canada, I think it's still growing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an art. And we've just formed the Music Supervisors Guild, and this is our first year, or is it our second year? I can't remember. But it's growing. We have more members. So I think as long as production keeps on going and we get bigger and stronger in that department, I think there'll be more and more music supervisors. And, you know, hopefully they all join the guild. So so they know what they're doing.
Very cool.
I know there's a little plug for the guild.
Especially with all the, like, a lot of production coming north of the border, I've been noticing that there's more supervisors up here. Or at least more people working on long format shows up here. Like, isn't Handmaid's Tale?
Yes.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, that is huge. The president of the guild did the first season of Handmaid's Tale, and he's quite proud of that. And I think we all are quite proud for him.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Even like it's not like through us, but like as Canadians, you feel like that, like, shit, we did something.
And in Ontario.
Yeah.
My friends are posting pictures of houses that are on the show that are in their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool.
Yeah. Another good friend of mine is a music supervisor on Orphan Black, which was, you know, worldwide.
Yep.
So that was pretty impressive.
So the future is bright.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Orphan Black, at our East location, there's like a whole bunch of locations that they used in that show, like specific alleyways and stuff. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah, like, you recognize it.
Yeah.
Well, I worked on a TV show called Being Erica, and that was amazing because friends of mine that live in the U.S., they loved that show. And, you know, it was all done in Toronto. So it was great. When they would come to Toronto, they would want to see Erica's house or the apartment that she lived in. They wanted to, you know, see the bar that they hung out in. So it was, you know, that was a lot of fun.
Super cool.
Yeah.
You go.
Okay. So, on that note,
yeah,
what advice would you give to a young lady, maybe 17 like you were, who wants a career as long and great as yours has been?
It's really funny. I just gave that advice to my niece. She's 17.
Aww. Yeah.
She is trying to figure out what she wants to do. So she likes my job. And I said to her, which I would say to everyone, is just listen to music. You got to listen to music all the time. You just, you know, don't be judgmental. And I also told her, you know, it would be great to take a business course, just to learn the ins and outs of business. That was the one thing that I actually did. I took a part-time, course at night, to learn about business. And, it just kind of gives you, a good introduction into, this world, because not only, you know, you get to do all the fun stuff, the music, there is a little bit of business behind it.
Yes.
You know, you have to be able to negotiate. You have to be diplomatic. You have to be organized. So, it's great that you know all this music and you know all these bands, but do you actually know how to make a deal?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really important to learn. So...
For sure. One thing that we didn't have on our list of questions, but I feel like we have to ask you because everyone's going to want to know, is what are you listening to now? If there's two artists that you could recommend to our listening ladies and men.
Well, I have to tell you that I love Leon Bridges.
Oh, my God. Don't even.
I know.
He's so good.
So good.
Just love. I love his new album.
I love his dance moves.
I know, me too.
I could watch him all day.
I think I've seen his Tiny Desk, his NPR Tiny Desk, like 6 times. No shame. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just love him. Love. And I think that stems from my father. Oh, my God. This is going to sound like a terrible story, but it actually is great because it's a great, for me, memory. So my father used to come home really drunk at night and wake me up when I was like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7. And he would take me downstairs and, he would put on all his old Motown, like Al Green and Marvin Gaye. And he would sing to me, and my father had a great voice. So I loved that as a kid, you know, I just loved it. Later on in life, when I heard the sounds of Al Green, and I couldn't believe I knew all the words to the songs. And my mom said, that's because your asshole father would wake you up. And I went, oh, wow. But I loved it. It's imprinted in my brain. So I think that's part of the reason why I love Leon Bridges. I just recently watched the... Amy Winehouse documentary.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I haven't. Was it amazing?
Oh, it's so good.
It really is amazing. I remember when the media would just put her down they said terrible things about her and made fun of her because she was a drug addict. And the company that I worked for previous to Tattoo, Amy actually came in to record.
Wow.
And unfortunately, I didn't get to see her, but we all knew she was in the building. And that was just an amazing moment. And we were so lucky to have her. I've rewatched the documentary, and I can't get enough of her song, Valerie. And
so good.
That's my go-to karaoke song.
Well, my niece sang it, and my niece is a singer, so... you know, she sang it for a recital, and from that moment on, I thought, I have to listen to this song pretty much every day, because, you know, it's something that my niece and I can connect to, and Amy was such a talent, and it's just so sad that she's gone so soon, so.
Yeah.
Great picks.
Great picks, man. Honestly. Gets me into this whole, like, whenever I think about Amy Winehouse, I get into this whole, like, Kurt Cobain, Amy Winehouse comparison and how he was revered and how Amy was ostracized for being a bad act. Like, that drives me crazy. So now I need to see this documentary.
You have got to.
You have to watch it.
You should see, there's this one scene when she's with Tony Bennett and she's so nervous because he's...
He's Tony Bennett.
He's Tony Bennett and he's her idol. And Tony, like, she stopped and started a couple times, and she was so nervous. And Tony said, you know, there's very few people that just got it. And, you know, she just had it. And it's, you know, it comes from her deep within her soul. Mm-hmm. And when you see that moment, you just go, wow, you saw a miracle. You just saw raw, beautiful talent. Mm-hmm. And again, it's so sad that she's not making music anymore. So.
R.I.P. lady. R.I.P. It's very sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day working with us every day.
Thanks for coming upstairs, Christine.
Thank you. Yeah.
I know we've been talking about this every day. We're like, so, when do you want to record? When do you want to record? Want to do it now? Want to do it now? We did it!
Yay! We did it.
Oh, I wasn't rolling on any of this. Is that fine?
Oh, God. Well, I hope you can edit some of that out, though.
Christine, that was beautiful. Don't worry.
Oh, okay.